Welcome back, everyone. We're diving into the world of butterflies today.
Oh, one of my favorite.
Always a good sign. Specifically, we're looking at some brand new research about the marsh fritillary butterfly,
Right.
fresh out of the Journal of Insect Conservation.
Nice.
And this deep dive, we're going to be focusing on how these butterflies behave
Oh, I.
at the edges of different habitats and what that tells us about conservation efforts.
Sounds fascinating.
So get ready, because these butterflies are picky. They're really particular about where they choose to fly.
Haha, picky butterflies. I'm all ears.
They almost act like they've got a real estate agent out there scoping out the best meadows.
Well, it does seem that way from this new research, doesn't it?
Right.
This study comes straight from the island of Gotland in Sweden.
Gotland.
Yeah. And it focuses on how marsh fritillaries act around the borders between ungrazed and heavily grazed areas.
Gotland. Now, that's a place I haven't heard in a while.
It's pretty special.
It's known for those unique calcareous wetlands, right?
You got it.
Calcareous. That just means the soil is packed with calcium carbonate, which
Exactly.
is perfect for the plants that these butterflies totally depend on.
It's like their ideal home. Those semi-natural grasslands on Gotland, they're like havens for biodiversity.
Right.
But unfortunately, they're vanishing all across Europe.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And that loss is a major concern for the marsh fritillary.
And so many other species.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's get into the nitty-gritty of this study.
Right.
The scientists really got up close and personal with these butterflies,
Oh, they did.
like hundreds of them tracked.
It was an incredible effort, meticulous tracking.
Wow.
They set up these large plots within ungrazed habitat,
Okay.
and each plot had one side right up against a grazed area,
I see.
and then they followed at this 208 individual marsh fritillaries,
208.
208 butterflies, carefully recording every single time one crossed that boundary,
Oh, wow.
and if it came back.
I can't even imagine trying to keep track of one butterfly, let alone 200.
It's not easy following those flitting wings around.
And on top of that, they were measuring the abundance of those crucial food sources for the butterflies.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the host plants their caterpillars need.
They had to get the full picture, right?
Right. It was a thorough study.
And the findings. Well, let's just say they were pretty remarkable.
Okay, on the edge of my seat, tell me more.
Turns out those marsh fritillaries were far less likely to cross into the grazed areas. Even
Interesting.
though there was nothing physically stopping them,
No fences for butterflies.
it was like an invisible barrier for these little guys.
Really?
Almost 85% chose to stay in those ungrazed plots.
85%. That's way more than you'd expect if they were just randomly flitting about, right?
You're telling me. So the question is, why this strong aversion to the grazed areas? What's going on?
Were they just not appealing enough? Like a bad neighborhood for a butterfly?
Well, for a marsh fritillary looking to start a family, those grazed areas, they're like a culinary desert.
Okay, now I'm really curious. Tell me more.
The researchers discovered a direct link between the butterfly's behavior and one key factor:
What's that?
the lack of their primary host plant, Cicisa pratensis, in those heavily grazed zones.
So it's not just about finding a place to land, it's about making sure their offspring have a chance to thrive.
Exactly. It's all about the next generation.
Wow.
Those grazed areas just don't offer the same resources, and previous research in this area shows that
Yeah.
butterfly nests were much less common there, and the survival rate for those eggs and larvae drastically lower, like 9 times lower.
9 times lower. That's a huge difference.
Right. Makes you wonder what's happening when those droughts hit, especially in those grazed
Well,
areas.
yeah, you mentioned droughts earlier. How does that play into all this?
When things dry out, those grazed areas, they don't have the plant cover to hold in moisture or provide shade.
Right.
They can become practically uninhabitable for the marsh fritillary.
So it's like a double whammy drought on top of already limited resources.
You got it. It really highlights why those butterflies are so picky about their little butterfly homes.
That makes a lot of sense. They're being strategic about where they choose to spend their time.
Exactly. It's all about survival.
This is fascinating. I'm really curious to hear more about the implications of this research for conservation.
Oh, it has some big implications.
And, let's dive into that right after a quick break.
Sounds good.
So we've got these butterflies making some pretty calculated real estate decisions here,
They are, aren't they?
driven by, that need to find the best spots for their offspring.
It's all about the next generation.
Exactly. But how does this all tie into conservation efforts? We can't exactly put up for sale signs for butterflies, can we?
That's where things get really interesting. This behavior, this hesitation to cross into grazed areas, it actually has huge implications.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
Think of it this way: those grazed patches become barriers.
Barriers.
They fragment the landscape, even if the distances are small.
So even if there are good spots scattered around, the butterflies might not be able to reach them if they're surrounded by these less than ideal grazed zones.
Exactly. It's a concept called habitat fragmentation, and it's a major challenge for conservation.
Hmm. Habitat fragmentation, I've heard that term before, but I'm not sure I've fully grasped it.
Well, think about it. Those isolated populations, they become much more vulnerable.
Vulnerable in what way?
Less genetic diversity, less resilience to things like diseases.
Oh, I see.
And even climate change impacts hit them harder.
It's amazing how these little choices,
right,
a butterfly deciding to turn left instead of right,
exactly,
can have such a big impact on the entire population's survival.
It really highlights how connected everything is.
It does. And I'm guessing this isn't just a problem for the marsh fritillary.
You're absolutely right. This study gives us a glimpse into a much larger issue.
Mm-hmm.
Many other grassland species are probably facing similar challenges because of this habitat fragmentation.
Wow.
It underscores the importance of connectivity in these landscapes.
Connectivity. Okay, so I get that it's a problem, but what can we do about it? Do we just ban all grazing in these areas?
That's a good question. And it's important to remember, yeah, it's not about eliminating grazing entirely. Traditional low-intensity grazing, it actually plays a vital role in maintaining these open grasslands.
Oh.
It's the intensive grazing that's the issue. Too much munching, not enough time for the plants to recover.
So it's all about balance, making sure the grazing benefits the whole ecosystem.
Exactly. It's about working with nature, not against it.
I like that, working with nature.
The study encourages us to consider more sustainable approaches.
Like what?
Things like rotational grazing, where livestock are moved between different areas.
Oh, so the vegetation gets a chance to bounce back.
Precisely. Or even setting aside specific zones as ungrazed refuges.
Ungrazed refuges. Those sound peaceful.
They do, don't they? Specifically for butterflies and other insects.
I love that idea. But realistically, how do we translate this research into actual change on the ground?
Well, I think awareness is a big part of it.
Awareness.
The more people understand these ecosystems and how interconnected they are, the more likely we are to see real change happen.
So knowledge is power.
Absolutely. Voters can advocate for policies that support sustainable land management.
Right.
Consumers can choose products from farms that prioritize biodiversity. It all adds up.
So we can all make a difference.
Every little bit counts.
I like that. And speaking of making a difference, you mentioned earlier that those grazed areas can become almost uninhabitable for the marsh fritillary, especially during droughts.
Oh, absolutely.
Can you give us a bit more detail on that? Why are those areas so harsh?
Imagine a lush meadow full of life.
Okay, got it.
Now picture that same meadow stripped bare by intensive grazing.
So the soil is exposed.
Exactly. It's vulnerable, no protection from the elements.
So during a drought.
It's brutal. The ground heats up. It becomes scorching hot.
Ouch. Not a good place for butterfly eggs and caterpillars.
Not at all. And remember, there's already less food available in those overgrazed areas.
Right. It's like a double whammy for these sensitive creatures.
You got it. Drought plus limited resources. It's a recipe for disaster.
You've done a great job connecting all the dots for us, showing how butterfly behavior, habitat quality, and these larger conservation issues are all intertwined.
It's all connected.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
But also a little daunting, to be honest. What else stood out to you from this research? Any other key takeaways we should be highlighting?
One thing that really struck me is the idea that these habitat edges.
You mean those boundaries between grazed and ungrazed areas?
Yes. Those boundaries, they're not fixed.
Oh, interesting. So it's not as simple as drawing lines on a map and saying, butterflies stay here, cows over there.
Not at all. It's much more dynamic than that.
Because
those edges can shift over time depending on all sorts of factors.
Right.
Management practices, weather patterns, you name it.
So it's constantly evolving puzzle.
Exactly. And that's why long-term monitoring and adaptive management are so crucial.
Adaptive management, what's that?
It means we need to keep learning, keep adjusting our strategies to account for those ever-changing conditions.
It's like a never-ending dance with nature.
In a way, yes. We need to learn to move with it, not against it.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And it really highlights the importance of continued research.
Absolutely. The more we understand these intricate connections, the better stewards we can be of these vital ecosystems.
We've covered a lot of ground today.
We have. From flitting butterflies to sustainable grazing.
You know, it's amazing how much there is to learn about these seemingly simple meadows.
Right. They're full of hidden complexities.
Before we wrap up, you mentioned that even small changes in an ecosystem can have these huge ripple effects.
It's true. Everything's connected.
So if the marsh fritillary is this sensitive to grazing,
yeah,
what does that tell us about the health of the entire grassland and, you know, all the other creatures living there?
That's a great question. It really highlights why this research is so important.
Okay, help me understand.
The marsh fritillary, it's what scientists call an indicator species.
An indicator species, what's that?
It's like a canary in a coal mine.
Okay, I've heard that phrase before, but what does it mean in the context of a grassland?
It means that the presence or absence of this butterfly can give us clues about the overall health of the ecosystem.
Like a warning sign.
They're particularly sensitive to changes, so if the marsh fritillary is struggling,
yeah,
it's a strong signal that the grasslands themselves might be in trouble.
So it's not just about protecting this one butterfly.
Right. It's much bigger than that.
It's about understanding that their decline could have a domino effect on the whole ecosystem.
Exactly. Think of all the other plants and insects.
Right, and the birds and mammals that depend on these grasslands.
The marsh fritillary sensitivity to grazing suggests those other species might be facing challenges too.
So the marsh fritillary is almost like sending us a message.
You could say that. It's telling us to pay attention.
It's a reminder to protect the balance of these grasslands.
Exactly. We need to manage them in a way that supports the whole ecosystem.
Well, this deep dive has definitely opened my eyes to the complexities of these amazing meadows.
They're full of surprises, aren't they?
We've learned about picky butterfly real estate.
Uh-huh.
The challenges of habitat fragmentation, sustainable grazing, and even those indicator species, the canaries of the grassland.
It's a lot to take in.
It is. But before we let our listeners go, what's the one key takeaway you hope they'll remember from this episode?
I think the most important message is that we all have a role to play in conservation.
Okay.
It's easy to feel overwhelmed by these big challenges.
I know what you mean.
But even small actions can make a difference. Learn about the butterflies and other species in your area.
Right.
Support organizations that are working to protect those habitats.
Makes sense.
And make conscious choices that support sustainable practices. It all adds up.
So it's not just about grand gestures.
Nope. Every step we take, no matter how small, it contributes to a healthier planet.
That's a really empowering thought.
It is. We're not powerless. We can all be a voice for these creatures and their ecosystems.
Beautifully said. And on that note, I think we'll leave our listeners with one final thought.
Okay.
If the marsh fritillary's reluctance to cross a boundary can teach us so much about the health of our grasslands, what other secrets might nature be waiting to reveal?
That's a great question to ponder.
Keep exploring. Stay curious.
And remember, every deep dive brings us closer to understanding the wonders of our planet.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.
It was a pleasure.